Welcome to the O Woman Podcast, where we discuss so many things related to women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships to our orgasms to our children and our ovaries, and we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. Thanks for joining me for the show today. This is episode 96 of the O Woman Podcast, and today we're going to talk about scientific sex, study and learn. And this is really an article review episode. I found this really interesting article on The Independent, and I'll put the link to the article inside the body of the post for today. It's called Sex in the Name of Science, What We Can Learn from Studying Intercourse. So it's a really interesting article because it gives information about people that will participate in sex studies, the doctors, their kind of their mindset about it, but then also talks about how this isn't really the full picture. And I just kind of want to start off by saying, who would do that? It's an interesting thing. I have never thought about whether or not I would go to a lab, if someone asked me, or just volunteer, and have sex, or watch porn, or whatever it is that they, you know, different things that they'll do with experiments, and have my, you know, arousal measured, or my muscle spasms measured, or whatever. I don't know if I would do that. I don't know if I would necessarily refuse to do it, but it's just not something that would cross my mind, and I think that's the case for a lot of people. So I think that it's really interesting to just wonder about who actually goes and does these studies. So one of the things that the article says, and the article, by the way, is written by Jane Usher, and it's on theindependent.co.uk. One of the interesting things that they talk about is that there is a different sort of people generally that volunteer to do sex studies. So when you are actually reading an article or you're reading information that someone said about this many percent of people are turned on while watching this, you know, it might be based on a laboratory measurement, but it also might be based on sort of a self-reporting survey. And so those are two different things, because a self-reporting survey, they might not report necessarily the truth. But still, either of those people who have agreed to participate in the sex study have different characteristics, not physical characteristics, but different sort of personality characteristics that than other people that have maybe said, no, I don't really want to. So one thing that the article says is that it's wondering how representative really is the people, or are the people that go and do these studies. How representative of the general population, you, for example, you know, someone who wants to know the answer to all these sex questions, how representative really are they? They found that male students, they're thinking college students, who volunteer for doing sexual experiments are usually less sexually fearful and guilty than the guys that say, oh no, I don't want to do that. They usually have had more sexual partners than the non-volunteers, and they have engaged in more of a diverse sexual behavior. So maybe not just heterosexual sex, maybe homosexual sex, maybe anal sex, maybe threesomes. You know, it just depends. So it's a different group of people than someone who might say, no, I don't want to do that. I'm sort of freaked out about the concept. They said that the women that volunteered generally have had one of these things. They might have more sexual trauma. They might masturbate more frequently. They might have had greater exposure to porn at an early age, and they might have less sexual fear. So, generally, which is interesting, researchers now who study sex and they do experimental things, like they measure, you know, how lubricated you get or your heart rate and all this stuff, there's not as many sex researchers that do that kind of experimental method. It's more common now to do self-reported survey or questioning, you know, ask someone questions instead of actually measure things. Some of the reasons are, you know, ethical considerations. It's hard to recruit people. And then when you do, perhaps the people you recruit might not be, a really good piece of the pie of the population. It might not be a representative spread. It might be one sort of person. And then also one big thing too is that the reason that they don't rely on just the experimental methods so much when they do sex research is because there's such an awareness now, and there should have been for a long time, that sex is more than the body. Sex is the emotions, and it's the mind, and it's your spirituality. And so it's really, you can't measure all those things. Those really are just measured through you reporting it you explaining how you feel and taking the time to do that. So usually sex researchers now will use like questionnaires or interviews and that kind of thing. You ask them about their behavior and their desires and that sort of thing. Now let's talk about sort of where this experimental sort of scientific measuring of sexuality came from. Like, when did it begin? Apparently there were two major pioneers for measuring and doing this research. There's William Masters and Virginia Johnson. And I think it's really interesting and great that it's both a male and a female involved doing this together. So they were the first researchers to observe sex in the lab. So actually invite people in and measure their bodily responses to things. This was in the 1950s. It was in the U.S. And they only studied prostitutes at first because they were worried that no one else would volunteer to do it. So they approached prostitutes and studied them at first. Their first big thing they did is they recruited women, and it was 145 women. They wore electrocardiographs, which was going to test their heart rate, and also a word I can't pronounce. What is this? Electroencephalographs. Okay, so that's clearly electric, measures on your scalp or brain. And that monitors your brain activity. So the experiments that they were doing, they would measure their response to porn via their brain activity and their heart rate, their response to masturbation, their response to vibrators. Later on, these researchers realized, hey, maybe we can branch out into the general community. Because just like the group of people that might volunteer now to do sexual research, it might not be representative of the general population. So they were thinking the prostitutes that we're talking to, they might not represent the beliefs and understandings and bodily responses of the general population because it's one group of people. So we should probably spread out and branch out a little bit. So later they involved some volunteers from just the general community. And I think this part is really interesting. They observed over 300 couples who had been randomly assigned into pairs having sex. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense to me. Am I misunderstanding the sentence? It sounds like they actually recruited 300 people who just agreed to have sex with a random person, and they recorded how their bodies responded. That, to me, is so shocking. And I know that there's people that would do that now. I am not one of those people. I think that would be a little bit too hard. First of all, to do it in a lab. And second of all, to do it with a total stranger. That would make me too uncomfortable. And it wouldn't accurately measure my sexual response because it would be like, hey, you're some random person I don't really know. Which kind of discounts a lot of the emotional, mental, and sort of spiritual aspects that go with sexuality and sex. Now, interestingly, from this research that they did, the first people that were looking into sexuality and studying it in the lab, they came up with that the human sexual response theory, which people still think about. It's this cycle of arousal, orgasm, and resolution is what that is, the human sexual response cycle. And for a long time, and even still today, it's part of the discourse about the idea between normal sex and dysfunctional sex or sexual dysfunction. And so it still has a lot of influence over the way our society conceptualizes sex, whether it's allowed or not, or good or bad, or if it's working or not, in the way medicine thinks about it and the way just the general population thinks about it. So I think that's interesting that a lot of our ideas about sexual function and sexual dysfunction come from these early experiments that might not have been representative of the group of people that we are as a very diverse society. So probably you're listening to this episode and you're thinking, how do they measure some of the other stuff in the lab? So I'm going to tell you, because they mentioned it in the article, some of the ways that they actually measure different sexual acts, if that you're someone's having sex in the lab. One of the ways is they might, and, you know, this isn't as common anymore because people generally do, you know, surveys or interviews or that kind of thing, but they could be filmed with kind of an infrared technology or like an emotion capture technology. And the researchers are in a separate place where they can hear what's going on, but they can't see the people. And the people have electrodes attached to them, which is recording their muscle activity, the way certain parts of their body move, and getting an idea of like how much force is involved. So they're able to tell about which position, you know, is best for this or that, or who chooses what position kind of thing. And the author mentions one bit of research that they were doing with this, you know, measurement was trying to see which positions work best for someone when the guy has back pain. And they determined it was doggy style, unless the woman has back pain too. And then that hurts her back. So you got to start from scratch. So I just thought that was kind of funny. Now there's other more invasive ways to measure sex, like actual sex in the lab. Is there's something called a penile I'm going to say this wrong. Some of these scientific words are very difficult for me because there's all these THs and Ys in them and stuff. Penile plethysmographs, which it measures the penis circumference as, you know, it either gets, you know, bigger or smaller in response to sexual images, and how hard a guy might get, you know, for example, if he's watching porn and they're trying to measure that. And then women's sexual arousal, listen to this, ladies, is measured by vaginal plethysmograph, which is like a sensor. It's like a cylinder thing. It's inserted in the vagina, kind of like a tampon, and it measures your sexual arousal, which the author notes does not sound very sexy. So I feel like that's going to skew the data a little bit, right? So another aspect too that she mentions that I think is interesting is considering that, you know, different people might say yes, different people might say no to agreeing to do sex research or participating in that kind of, you know, actually having sex in the lab, is maybe some of the people might actually be more turned on knowing that somebody's like watching them, which there's nothing wrong with that. But how does that change our idea of the findings? You know, so it's really interesting to think about that. So considering all of the kind of the gray area that goes with this, some people think, oh, well, maybe there's no real importance in even doing these scientific measurements. Maybe you should just ask people. But to some degree, there is a value because it looks into the physical aspects of sex, because that is part of sex. And then the interviews and the surveys can kind of delve more into the emotional side of sex and the spiritual side of sex. So it's kind of nice to have both bits of information available to you. And I encourage you just to think, like, would you ever do that? I wouldn't, but I know plenty of people would be willing to if someone approached them. It is an interesting concept because for a lot of people, sex is very private, and to discontinue privatizing it makes it less what it is. And perhaps the measurements are different. I don't know. It's up to you. Think about that. Just see how you feel. So hopefully you learned a couple new things today about sex in the lab and sex for science. I was shocked and excited by this article. I thought it was really, really cool, so I wanted to talk about it. Once again, just to mention, I'm going to put the link in the body of the post so you can read the article yourself. And thanks, as always, for listening. Check out the website. Check out Facebook. Subscribe on iTunes, awomanpodcast.com, and you can search A Woman Podcast on Facebook and iTunes, and you'll find me. Thanks for listening, as always, and I'll talk to you next time. Okay, bye.